90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Andrew Edmondson, and you are listening to Queer Voices on KPFT Houston. On June 2nd, Black Lives Matter Houston organized a march that brought tens of thousands of citizens to the streets of downtown Houston to protest the murder of George Floyd. Floyd was a 46-year-old African-American man born in Houston who was killed by a police officer in Minneapolis who placed his knee on Floyd's neck for 8 minutes. The protesters in Houston demanded justice, police accountability, and change. Brandon Mack is an organizer with Black Lives Matter Houston. He is one of Houston's most high-profile activists. He serves on the board of trustees of the Houston LGBT Political Caucus, expertly managing the caucus's fractious process for endorsing political candidates. He has also served as volunteer coordinator for the Houston chapter of the Human Rights Campaign. We are pleased to welcome Brandon to Queer Voices for the first time to talk about the future of Black Lives Matter Houston, Brandon's evolution as an activist, and his research into the topic of ephemophobia. Brandon, welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you so much for having me.
So over the last 3 months, we've seen an incredible momentum for Black Lives Matter nationally and Black Lives Matter Houston. Can you talk about what you see as the key objectives of Black Lives Matter Houston for the next 6 months and then maybe for the long term?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I want to make very clear to everyone is that Black Lives Matter is many things. It is first and foremost a simple declarative statement that Black Lives Matter. And one of our main objectives as an organization is to make sure that everyone knows just that, that our lives matter. And we work to make sure that we support the Black community in any way that we can support the community. So in terms of some of our major objectives are to continue the mutual aid that we provide. So right now we're working on a coronavirus response where we are supporting families that have been impacted by the coronavirus through PPE, as well as providing financial assistance where we can. Another big objective of us is, of course, police brutality, both here in the city of Houston, but also nationally. So we're going to continue to bring attention to the cases such as Breonna Taylor. There still hasn't been an arrest for her murder. We're still going to bring attention to George Floyd and that particular case, but also to the cases that are going on here in the city of Houston. Many people are not aware of the fact that there have been, since April, 7 officer-involved shootings here in the city of Houston, and we're still calling for accountability and transparency in all of those cases. So those are some of our major objectives. But one of the other things that I want people to know is that this is a continuous movement. So it isn't just about this touchstone. So we're going to keep reminding people about where are they when it comes to caring for Black lives and the things that they can do at the individual as well as the larger level.
And so you mentioned there had been seven officer-involved shootings here in Houston over the past few months. Isn't there some concern that no videos of those shootings have been released, and also that many of those people are Black or people of color?
Exactly. So that is definitely what the biggest concern is the fact that there has been a lack of transparency. There are some instances in which the family does not want the video to be released, and we completely and totally understand that. But it is important that some other individuals, such as an actual police oversight board that actually has power to look at those videos, has the ability to look at that, and it is independent of the Houston Police Department. So there is a need for greater transparency with respect to those incidences, because right now there really isn't any transparency that is going on. In order for there to truly be transparency, it has to be someone independent. There is no real trust in the police kind of policing themselves, because we've seen too often where that goes on and there is no changes in terms of the behavior of police. And we continue to see these incidences in which Black and brown people are disproportionately being killed by police officers.
And there has been some criticism of Houston's Independent Police Oversight Board that it does not have subpoena power, that it must rely upon Houston Police Department to provide all the information on the investigation, that it can make recommendations, but the police department doesn't even have to respond to the recommendations that it makes. Do you have confidence in the Independent Police Oversight Board that is supposedly overseeing the Houston Police Department?
Currently, I do not have a lot of faith in that particular board, and it isn't because of the board itself. It is because of the limitations on that board. As you mentioned, they do not have subpoena power. There is nothing that ensures that the Houston Police Department is going to take and act on those recommendations. And that board has been in existence for several years. So if that board was truly effective, we would not be seeing what we are seeing with respect to 7 deaths from police officers, and also the negative interactions that HPD still continues to have with respect to not only the activist community, but the Black and Brown communities. The fact that we have a head of a police officers union who is willing to call activists dirtbags because we call for accountability is a sign that even that police oversight board is not a mechanism that's working, because truly, if he was responsive to that, he wouldn't be saying statements like that. We would see better police officer relations between the Black and Brown communities as well as HPD. So that's the reason for why I just don't have faith in this board. And in order for us to really have faith in this board, they need to have subpoena power and they need to actually have the recommendations being implemented.
And in response to the murder of George Floyd and to the 7 people who have been killed as a result of officer-involved violence by Houston Police Department, Mayor Sylvester Turner put together a 45-member task force to look at Houston Police Department policies and to conduct a review. Initially, it was said that it would be completed by September 1st. Then it was announced that it could go as far as October 1st. And I think that there were concerns that the contract with the Houston Police Officers Union was being renegotiated, and that at a certain point, if the city did not indicate that they wished to make changes to that contract, that it would continue as it is with several features that prevent accountability and transparency. Can you tell us your take on Mayor Turner's police task force looking into policies for the Houston Police Department?
To me, when I heard about the task force, I felt that it was, once again, a symbolic gesture and not something that was going to really implement a lot of change. The fact that the board itself is as large as it is also a sign of the ineffectiveness of that particular board. We haven't seen really anything with respect to community engagement, with the exception of 1 Google form in which they were soliciting advice. But where is the other ways for the community to get involved with respect to that board? As I have put out even in my own social media, task force and commissions to me are the new thoughts and prayers, meaning that it is just a symbolic gesture. It is not really something that is producing actual systemic change. So what I want to see from that particular task force is what exactly are they going to come up with in terms of policies, and is HPD and the city of Houston actually going to go along with that? Because to me, you just added another board for people to sound off their opinions, but you're not taking those opinions and you're not taking those recommendations. So we are definitely going to continue to monitor what happens with respect to this task force, but I will be very, very honest, I'm not optimistic.
And if you had a magic wand and you could wave that wand and change 4 things about the Houston Police Department or the state of policing in Houston in the year 2020, what would be your top 4 changes that you would implement?
First and foremost, the police would actually be abolished. And when people hear about abolished policing, what they need to understand is it doesn't mean that poof, it goes away. What it means is the police department, in terms of its roles and responsibilities, would radically change. The fact that we think that police actually deter crime, there have been several studies that have shown that they actually do not deter crime. The fact that police get called out when it comes to mental health issues and they don't have the training to be able to address mental health issues is also a thing that is really ineffectual with police. So for me, that's the reason why, if I could wave a magic wand, I would abolish policing, because we also got to remember that historically, policing started out as being slave catchers. So inherently,
unpack that thought for those of us who don't know our history so well.
Sure. So if you think back to the early forms of police departments and the early forms of policing, their main function was to protect property. Unfortunately, African Americans in this country started off as slaves. We weren't even considered to be humans. We were considered to be property. So when an African American slave ran away, they were violating the law, and police officers would track them, catch them, either bring them back or hang and kill them. And so hence, inherently, police have always had a negative view of Black people because of the way they started. And that is the essence of police culture. It gets passed down from generation to generation. So when we talk about abolishing policing, part of that is also about abolishing police culture. You can't just simply change it. It has to be sort of, you know, gutted and removed and then built back up again. So if, once again, going back to your central question, if I had it my way, I would wave a magic wand. There wouldn't be policing as we currently see it. It would be abolished. And then we would reimagine a new system, in which case we can protect each other. We can respond better in more effective ways. And those resources could be allocated to those better ways, but it wouldn't be in the current system that we see right now.
And if you've just joined us, you are listening to Queer Voices. I am Andrew Edmondson, and we are speaking with one of Houston's leading activists, Brandon Mack. He is an organizer with the Black Lives Matter Houston movement. He is also a trustee for the Houston LGBTQ Political Caucus and manages their endorsement process very smoothly. Brandon, many people may not know that Black Lives Matter, both in Houston and nationally, has had a very strong queer influence. Can you talk about how that influence played out in its founding and in the way that the organization continues to evolve?
Absolutely. So nationally, Black Lives Matter started off as a hashtag that was created by three women of color. Two of those women of color are members of the LGBTQ plus community. So inherently, the Black Lives Matter movement has always been a queer led movement, just inherently from the start of that particular hashtag. Now, here in Houston, Black Lives Matter Houston is a queer led organization. All five of the organizers of Black Lives Matter Houston are all members of the LGBTQ community. And so we've always have set at that intersection, or as W.E.B. Du Bois calls, double consciousness of being both Black as well as being LGBTQ. So inherently, because we want people to know that our lives matter, we always center and work from a Black queer perspective.
And I've heard some people recently say that they feel like that the Black Lives Matter, with the murder of George Floyd, has put a very strong emphasis on the cis heterosexual Black male and has lost that focus on the queer community. Do you think that that is a valid criticism?
We care about all Black lives. And we have to care about queer lives as well, because we also, unfortunately, get disproportionately negatively impacted by interactions with police, but also in terms of murder just because of who we are. So, for example, the fact that Black trans lives and murders are at the highest rates that we have seen, that is a reason why that is a Black Lives Matter issue, because those lives fundamentally matter. So I don't think it's a valid criticism at all when people say that, oh, the focus is should be on one or the other. We're focused on valuing Black people and valuing Black lives, because unfortunately, anti-Blackness is a global problem. We have a problem as a society in devaluing Black lives. So our work is
anti-Blackness. Can you talk for people who may not understand that? Like, how does that manifest itself? What does that look like?
Sure. So anti-Blackness manifests itself in a variety of different ways. First and foremost, through systemic oppressions. The fact that we have so many inequalities as it's related to race, the fact that Black people don't get paid the same amount for doing the same amount of work, the fact that we don't have the same access to education and other opportunities, the fact that we deal with being perceived as being negative inherently because of who we are, because of racism. All those things are manifestations of anti-blackness. And once again, it's not just a United States problem. It's a worldwide problem. It's why we saw apartheid in South Africa. It's why we've seen negativity towards black people in other parts of the world. So we have to be able to address all those issues if we're really truly going to move to an anti-racism framework.
So, Brandon, I look at your social media feed and you seem to be constantly working. You've got a full-time job. You're very active with the caucus. You're very active with Black Lives Matter Houston. Can you talk about what inspired you to this level of activism? How did you begin? How did your journey as an activist evolve?
I grew up in a very small town and was often one of the only black students in my class. So I often had to advocate for myself. And I would always feel this sense of negativity in being in those spaces because I was a very smart black kid. So I often got labeled as being an Oreo. I often got labeled as being less of who I am because of my race. So inherently, I always had to advocate for myself from a very young age. I also felt very connected to history. So feeling connected to Martin Luther King, feeling connected to Malcolm X, feeling connected to Ella Baker and to other individuals who have fought for their rights and for our rights as black people. So that kind of started my activism spirit, is just being connected to history and always having to advocate for myself. I've been an active activist, as I like to say, for the last 15 years. So it started when I was in college, coming into the realization of myself of being a black, same gender loving gay man, and seeing the fact that oftentimes our voices are not at the table. Our experiences are not being shared and not being attentive to. So I wanted to make sure that every place that I go and every sphere that I'm in, I bring all of myself and I bring all the people who are like me with me. So that's what's kept me being an activist, is making sure that we are at the table and that our issues are being addressed.
When you're doing those caucus endorsements and you're having to work full-time job and then 5 or 6 hours each night, what keeps you going?
What keeps me going is the fact that I want to see the world be as equitable as possible. So it's fundamentally feeling that the work that I'm doing is moving us towards that equity. And that's what keeps me going. So even when I see loss, even when I see that issues are moving backwards and not forwards, I keep going because I'm going to be determined that we will get there. I love what I do. I love the communities that I am a part of. And I'm going to fight for our communities till the very, very end.
In social justice movements, there are those people who work outside the movement, and then there are people who work inside the power structure to try to effectuate change. I think of the 1960s civil rights movement, where you had the Black Panthers who were working outside of the power structure, who were forcibly and aggressively pushing America to live up its promise of equity. But then there were people within the sort of mainstream civil rights movement, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, who were trying to work with elected officials and politicians. What's interesting to me about your activism is you seem like you're an activist who's outside the movement with Black Lives Matter Houston, but then you're also very much working the inside track through the Houston LGBT Political Caucus, trying to get public officials elected who can help create change. Can you talk about, is that a deliberate conscious choice on your part?
It's a deliberate conscious choice because we have to have both. You have to have those individuals who are working outside of the structure, like you stated, to create the world that we really want to see. But we also got to work within the existing power structures to change them. It is definitely an inherent choice that I've made to operate that way. And it's also something that I very fundamentally believe that we need all different forms of activism. One big thing that I really don't like, I don't like seeing when we privilege certain forms of activism, or when some people try to suggest that one form of activism is better than the other. It's not that way. We need all different types of activists. So we need the individuals who are going to be out there protesting. We need those individuals who are working inside the power structure to move people to the right direction. And we got to work together. And I see it on a daily, day-to-day basis in all the different forms of activism that I'm involved in, where I see us working in tandem together to achieve the ultimate objective, which is racial equity. That's the reason why it is a fundamental choice for me to operate in that way, because we need all the different forms.
We are speaking with Brandon Mack. He is on the board of the Houston LGBT Political Caucus and a lead organizer for the Black Lives Matter Houston movement. Brandon, there has been a very popular best-selling book this summer called Begin Again, James Baldwin's America and Its Urgent Lessons for Our Own. Can you talk about who James Baldwin was and why he was important and what type of influence he's had on your evolution as an activist?
Well, James Baldwin was an unapologetic Black gay man who it was a fantastic author. He wrote the book Go Tell It on the Mountain. He also wrote one of the first Black LGBTQ books, Giovanni's Room. And so for me, he has always been an inspiration because he really showed the power of being your authentic self and speaking about the experiences of being a Black gay man in America. It is very, very important that we draw strength from our ancestors, and he's definitely an ancestor that I draw strength from in terms of the work that I try to do in being my unapologetic self in talking about the intersections of race and sexuality and race and gender orientations and just all the intersections of who we are, because it is through us being our unapologetic selves that we're able to show the world who we are, and that makes it a lot harder for you to hate someone when you know exactly who they are.
So this past summer in August, Senator Kamala Harris made history when she was the first Black woman who was selected for the major American vice presidential and presidential ticket. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings and your take on Senator Harris and what this moment means?
I'm very happy about this moment because of just the symbolicness of this moment. The fact that Kamala Harris is the first Black woman, the first Indian American woman to be on a major party ticket is a huge success. Now, with that being said, there are certain actions that Kamala Harris did during her time as an attorney general that are up for questions because of the fact that she was unfortunately having to do her job with respect to law enforcement. While I am very, very happy that Kamala Harris is on that ticket, what I'm going to be interested to see is what are the policies that the Biden-Harris administration is going to produce and how is that going to affect Black lives. I tell everyone that you can do both things simultaneously. You can be happy and support someone, but at the same time, you hold them accountable for the job that they're doing. That's what I'm looking forward to when it comes to Kamala Harris, is being supportive and voting for her and Joe Biden in November, but also holding them accountable once they're in office.
And is that in terms of criminal justice policy? Is that in terms of...
That's in terms of everything, because it's not, because to me, it is about all the policies that are going to be possible with respect to both criminal justice reform, what's going to be done with respect to education, how are we going to address food insecurities, all the different elements that impact Black life.
We have been speaking with Brandon Mack. He is on the board of the Houston LGBT Political Caucus, and he is also a high-profile organizer for the Black Lives Matter Houston movement. Brandon, does Black Lives Matter Houston have a website where people can get more information and learn more about what you're doing?
You can find us on blmhouston.com. That is our central website. And we're also available on social media through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at BLMHOU.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us, Brandon.
Thank you so much.
This is Queer Voices.
I'm Andrew Edmondson, and you are listening to Queer Voices on KPFT Pacifica.